Welcome back to the Fitz News Studios, another edition of Your Week in Review. I'm Will Folks. I'm the founding editor of Fitz News. I'm your host for the episode. We've got a ton of ground to cover. This is a big public safety episode. Ton of issues, a ton of different geographic locales, unsolved cases, solved cases, and cases in which justice clearly has not been done. Unfortunately, that's far too often par for the course here in the Palmetto State. We're going to walk you through a ton of these cases, and last but not least, I'm going to walk you through a major financial issue underpinning state government and its ongoing failure to prioritize the money that we send for politicians to spend. All of that and more coming your way on the Week in Review. All right, so I'm joined now by Jen Wood, our research director. I'm going to put these headphones on so I can hear Jen, talk to Jen. We're starting off, Jen, with a story that our audience needs really no background on, but I'll give you just the quick nickel tour of Bowen Turner. This is a fortunate son from Orangeburg, South Carolina, accused of raping three different women over a period of a little over a year back in 2018, 2019. He was the recipient of a sweetheart plea agreement in the aftermath of those allegations, one negotiated by a powerful lawyer legislator. There's that theme again. Powerful politicians who appoint judges, manipulating outcomes in the courtroom. This is a case study in that. But in spite of that leniency he was showed, Bowen Turner couldn't stay out of trouble, wound up Mother's Day 2022 being involved in an incident where he allegedly threatened to bite the finger off a correctional officer during an arrest for some drunken behavior where he was, incidentally, we're told, potentially trying to lure a fourth alleged victim into his vehicle. It's a story that, again, we've been following for some time. But Bowen Turner, we reported on this last month, Jen, was involved in a major accident in Florence County, South Carolina. I just want to pull up real quick before we start this segment. This is a picture of the car Bowen Turner was, or truck rather. I'm sorry, he's in a truck here. This is the scene of the accident. The kid's not wearing a seatbelt. Look at this, Jen. How's the guy walk away from this?
I mean, that was some substantial damage. The witness said he rolled multiple times and walked away from it.
Unbelievable. Well, believe it or not, none of those rolls knocked any sense into Bowen Turner because, as we have seen on this lengthy dash cam video obtained under the Freedom of Information Act from the South Carolina Highway Patrol, and by the way, I want to thank them for coughing this information up from our FOIA request. But, Jen, well, let's just cut to this first clip. Here's Bowen Turner in the squad car after this accident.
Yeah, what was that phone call?
With him?
Yeah.
Or just in the car?
Well, according to the paramedics, you could have lit a match over his mouth and started the fire.
Okay.
And what do you arrest me for exactly? Again?
Driving on the impulse.
Oh, but do you have any evidence? Let's be honest. Huh? What is your evidence, please?
You goddamn dyke, bitch. I know how you acting. Ma'am, please don't do this. I've been respectful. Please don't do this, ma'am. Ma'am, please. What have I done to deserve this? Ma'am, I am a white boy, okay? Can I please speak? Ma'am, I promise I cannot go here, ma'am. Please. Please, please. Ma'am, I cannot go here, ma'am.
All right, so Jen, who is this trooper that's transporting Bowen Turner here from the hospital to the Florence County Detention Center? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, so that lovely trooper is South Carolina Highway Patrol Trooper Sierra Calamaris, who I think absolutely should be in the running for Trooper of the Year for how she handled that situation. I mean, she showed so much control and restraint. I was like, I don't know that I could have held it together like that.
Well, a lot of folks are asking, why was he in the front seat to begin with? Is that something?
There is an answer for that. So if a patrol car does not have a cage in between the front seat and the back seat, they have to transport them in the front seat.
Okay, so that wasn't something that was out of protocol. That's protocol. Okay.
That is protocol.
Well, let me ask you this. Do we have a ma'am count on this video? I mean, how many times does this kid say
ma'am? Ma'am, 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 ma'am.
I mean, what's
Please, ma'am.
Oh, man. Telling her he's under protective custody and he can't go to the detention center. Well, before we cut back to this clip, because I want to, there's so much gold in this. I mean, obviously, he apparently peed himself before he makes his appearance on camera. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah. And then you see him getting into the car. He's in a, you know, plaid shirt, unbuttoned, no shirt underneath, and his boxers.
After attempting to escape from the hospital.
Yes. Yes, he said he had to.
Arrest.
Yeah, said he had to use the bathroom, and they allowed him to use the bathroom. And when she peeked behind the curtain, he was trying to get through a door to leave. So little respect for authorities. It was just, it's very telling. I mean, his behavior with the trooper.
Yeah, indeed. And you know, it's for a long time, it's ma'am. It's, you know, the faux Southern humility, but then when he doesn't get what he wants, he turns into a viper. I mean, let's listen to this little cut where he calls her out as something pretty vulgar. Let's take a listen here.
You just resisted arrest, and you're going to tell me that I got a vendetta?
Yeah, how am I resisting arrest, ma'am? You sitting here, I got my goddamn handcuffs on. You got me in handcuffs. How am I resisting arrest? Please. Don't worry. You goddamn dyke, bitch. I know how you acting. Don't worry about it. And I apologize. I didn't mean to say that. I'm aggravated.
You say what you feel.
Well, I did feel that, but I apologize.
Well, there you go. No reason to apologize.
So that's the real Bowen Turner right there, right, Jen?
Yeah. And I was talking to somebody that watched it and said, you know, the way he switches back and forth from, you know, ma'am, to like, he just loses it. It was, you know, it's explosive. And, you know, I think we got a real good sense of who this young man is. And he certainly isn't a gentleman, and he certainly should not be allowed amongst, I mean, there needs to be some serious rehabilitation and treatment there.
Well, some consequences. Well, let's talk just a little bit about first, before leading up to this. Obviously, I talked about the allegations against him, talked about the Mother's Day 2022 incident. He actually, there was some accountability for Bowen Turner. In the aftermath of all that, he was, his parole was revoked. He was sent to prison, stayed there for what, a year?
Yes. And then he was just released in December. And he was supposedly released to, very, very active parole supervision.
Right. Well, clearly not active enough. But walk us through, Jen, what happened after this incident? So he's taken, we see the video ended with him going into the Florence County Detention Center as the Trooper of the Year deposits him, much to Bowen Turner's chagrin. But what happens after this? Where is he now? Is he, what's the latest on his situation?
Well, so he was granted bail, but since he had violated his terms of his probation, obviously, you know, by being arrested, he was held in Florence County Detention Center at the request of SCDC, and he has since been transferred to Kirkland Correctional Institution, despite the fact, as he says in the video, I'm a white boy.
A white boy, my gosh. Well, we heard a lot of folks throw the term white privilege out on social media. I am very rare to go down that road, but, you know, in this case, if the boot fits, you know, kind of hard to argue it in this case with Bowen throwing that out there, playing his own version of a race car, Jen Wood. not very well either.
I mean,
well,
this
let me
whole
ask
thing-
you this.
Just, and the whole thing was just, I mean, it was amusing to watch, but then you just, like, you really have a new appreciation for what law enforcement officers go through, you know, every shift.
Yeah, true. And, you know, you and I, we sat and we laughed at it. And, you know, a lot of folks who obviously watched this laughed at it because he is he's the butt of the joke in this video. But, you know, we would also remind everybody, Jen, your work researching his story and uncovering all the filings, it clearly isn't a joke what this guy has done, the damage he's done to so many lives. And so, you know, we do temper that as we watch this, and Yeah, we just hope that at some point, reality sets in with this guy. I mean, I don't know whether it's just the addiction to alcohol, because obviously we found out he was beyond blitzed during this latest wreck, allegedly, according to the arresting officer. So at what point, I mean, he spent a year in SCDC. He's flipped his truck however many times on a Florence County road. At what point do you think, you know what, maybe I'm going to take a break from the bruise tonight? I mean, at what point does, I mean, seriously, you got kids, I got kids.
It's a good question. I mean, clearly there are a lot of issues going on there, and he needs help addressing them.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to teach him what responsibility and accountability is.
Yeah, you just said it, responsibility and accountability. And Jen, here's another situation where let's go back to the initial sexual assault allegations against this young man. We are now talking 6 years ago when all this first began to bubble up. And folks, you want to know what happens when you don't hold people accountable? We talked about it, you know, so many times in the past. This is what happens when you don't hold people accountable. This right here. And thank God that we're just sitting around laughing at a silly video instead of him, you know, killing people.
Yeah, I mean, he had
driving drunk through Florence County.
The witness to the accident said he had, you know, they were on a 2-lane road and he had crossed the center line in his vehicle. And when he swerved to correct, overcorrected and flipped. And thank God he didn't hit that person, because that would have been a head-on collision. And, you know, as many times as he rolled, they were going at a good speed.
Yeah. Well, Jim Wood, you've done amazing work researching this Bowen Turner case from the very beginning. Again, going back years now that we've been covering this stain on the state. But thank you, Jen, for your work getting this Freedom of Information Act submitted, getting this material back, helping us analyze it. And hopefully at some point in this saga, there will be accountability for Bowen Turner. As it stands right now, the kid still hasn't learned his lesson. So you watched the last segment. Obviously, you know, we care about your safety, about public safety, the safety of our communities. But as you'll hear about in the next segment, we also care about your bottom line, about letting you keep more of what you earn. All these things, I believe, are interconnected. Folks who are employed, who are prosperous, are less likely to engage in criminal activity, which in turn makes them less likely to be linked to violent acts. It's all connected again. But here at Fitz News, we try to advance positions and policies that lead to better outcomes on all these fronts. We're going to talk about some of the fiscal policies in a minute, but when it comes to public safety, you're familiar probably if you watch us with a lot of them. We believe in fully funding law enforcement and courts and cops and prosecutors, but we also believe in holding them accountable when they step out of line. Because again, it all leads back to the outcomes. Now, as we've covered this past week, there have been a ton of instances of violent crime. One of them involved a shooting, car chase, and eventually car crash in the city of Columbia, South Carolina, involving an individual who was, shocker here, out on bond for some violent crimes. And that incident led to the deaths of three different people. There was a man shot and killed at a car dealership. There was a pregnant mother who today had her baby shower scheduled. Both she and her unborn son lost their lives in the crash related to that spasm of violence that unfolded on the streets of Columbia earlier this week. But as we think about these crimes, I remember, what was the book? Crime and Punishment. Well, guess what, folks? In South Carolina, we got plenty of crime, precious little punishment. And as a result, left unchecked, that crime has continued to expand. So I'm joined now by our Andy Fanchers. We're going to talk about some of the consequences of this outbreak of violent crime here in the Palmetto State. Andy, it has been an absolutely brutal week in South Carolina for public safety, has it not?
It absolutely has been. And I think, you know, in working with me, I'm someone who likes to rely on absolute certainty. And what we're absolutely certain of is that we have got at least four women who have wound up in places that they probably shouldn't have been. resulting in some casualties, some incidents confirmed, some otherwise unavailable on the public index. But it is getting very strange across the Palmetto State indeed.
So we've got, walk us through a few of these. I know that we've been following, obviously, the story of the woman that was found at the Jasper County boat ramp. You broke that story. Walk us through the individual cases that we're tracking.
Sure. So last time you and I sat down on the Weekend Review, I was preparing to go to Jasper County to investigate that situation a little bit further, also upon the promise that there was going to be a press conference related to that.
What happened with that?
It was canceled.
Oh, Lord.
And we weren't the only outlet standing by within proximity of the sheriff's office waiting for an update on that investigation, which, quite honestly, we haven't really made much strides in that department. What we know from this Jasper County incident, for those who are unaware, we had a fella driving an ATV at the terminus of Corner Lake Road, where he comes upon someone who appears to have been bound, at least hands behind their back. According to some sources we have, it was a badly beaten, over half naked woman, zip tied at the hands, purportedly at the feet too. SLED was requested to investigate several days after that.
Which is interesting, because originally the local sheriff's office said SLED was on the scene working with them through the night. We've since found out that that isn't the case. They were asked to investigate the identity.
They requested to assist, and that assisting became a full-on SLED is investigating, due to what Jasper County told me specifically, is because suspects led well beyond their jurisdiction. And of course, we know the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division has full, complete state jurisdiction. So,
but they haven't released a victim's name?
No, and I think out of respect of the victim, who has been identified, I've been told, at this time, they will likely not be releasing her name, which we, of course,
understand. And she's alive.
She is alive. Last I heard from an anonymous source very close to that situation, she had a tracheotomy.
Oh, wow.
So, badly beaten indeed. But this wasn't the only case on even that day.
Yeah, walk us through.
3.5 hours after the woman was discovered at that Corner Lake boat landing on the Chusawatchee River, mm-hmm. we have a scantily clad woman in her 50s emerging from the marshlands in Berkeley County, Daniel Island. Mm-hmm. Now, according to some folks who reached out to us, because this is not in the public ether, this is not in the ether.
Yeah,
you know?
Just like the first case, we broke it.
Right? Correct. In fact, you heard of the police response a day before Jasper County Sheriff's Office put out anything about it. This case is nowhere, to my understanding. Mm-hmm. So what we know is that a scantily clad woman emerged from Clowder Creek on Daniel Island. And according to a resident in that area, they actually sent this to our outlet. Quote, she was disoriented and hypothermic and said she and her sister were running from men. No one knows where she came from or how she ended up in the river.
She and her sister.
Possibly
two women here.
Potentially two, but all that we know for sure, or at least according to our sources, is that there was at least one woman who emerged very disheveled in a place that she should not have been.
And now, again, no proactive notification of this from the press, just like the Jasper thing.
Just like the Jasper woman. Now, of course, Jen Wood has since confirmed with Berkeley that it's actually a Charleston County Sheriff's Office investigation.
Right on the border there.
Right on the border. It's marginal there. But it's my understanding that Charleston County has been unresponsive in her request, which is why she has subsequently submitted a FOIA on that incident. And just when you thought it couldn't get stranger, we have Walterboro. So now, come April 10th, exactly 1 week after the Jasper County woman was found on that boat landing, we have a woman who's found decomposing in a suitcase near downtown Walterboro.
1,500 feet from the courthouse there, the Collin County Courthouse, where the Murdoch saga unfolded.
Yeah.
Just south of there, we've got a woman decomposing in a suitcase. Where is this? Like on a, where is this? What is it? Like in a building? What's going on with this?
Right. So we understand this is the 200 block of Moore Street on a property owned by a now deceased elderly man. It is adjacent to an abandoned building. We're talking canopy trees, a lot of overgrowth. Now, we're receiving some conflicting information from Walterboro PD itself about this incident. It's worth noting, they have not put out anything on Facebook, at least at the time of our recording, that this even happened. We had to rely on anonymous sources and then get confirmation through the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division that this even happened. So what we're hearing from the police department is that there have been no missing persons reported in Walterboro, and at least the city proper, and that this woman remains unidentified. Now, within the hour of hearing from a sergeant who spoke with me specifically on this, we get a press release from Walterboro PD stating that the whole reason they found this woman was on reports of a missing woman.
So, once again, for the third time, you just mentioned this is a case where no notification, at least until we start asking questions.
Correct.
So, Andy, what do we have any identity for this woman? So we've got, and I'm trying to recap here. We've got a badly beaten woman found on a boat landing in Jasper.
Correct.
Who was in stable condition, but had a tracheotomy. Not sure who she is, what her story is. Two women come out of the marsh on Daniel Island. No announcement there either. Not sure who they are or what their story is. They're right. Both alive, presumably, we're told. But now a woman deceased, decomposing, you said, in a suitcase in Walterboro. And we're just getting started here. There's another situation in Columbia. Tell us about what happened in Columbia.
Correct. So in Columbia, just Thursday, we have a woman who, upon the own words of Columbia Police Department, a suspicious death. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd say it's pretty suspicious if you wind up dead in a dumpster behind a gas station. And she has since been identified publicly. Unlike the aforementioned, this woman has been identified as Dominique Palermo Pohl, 32-year-old, out of Columbia. And just based off of the mapping so far, she's certainly the furthest from where this very interesting saga of women winding up in weird places started. So
now, in this case, though, there is one thing we do want to point out. Columbia PD did proactively release this information. This is the only one of the four cases we're talking about right now, Andy, where there was actually a public notification before media began asking questions.
Correct. So, if we want to give Columbia Police Department any credit, it is that they did put this out in the ether almost immediately. As for Jasper County Sheriff's Office, who would be running in second place here, they, of course, notified the public of a woman found bound the following morning. Mm-hmm. And the two additional agencies involved here, nothing.
Let me ask you this, Andy. I've received more texts and emails and social media messages and phone calls from women in the Lowcountry, in Columbia, even in the upstate, asking me, basically, this is the one question they want to know. Is all of this connected? Is there a ring of trafficking that's been broken up? Is there a group of snitches that are trying to be silenced? I mean, what the hell is happening here? Do we have any idea whether any of this is connected?
Well, I think you know, just as when we first started this interview, I rely on absolute certainty, right? That being said, I'll entertain this conversation a little bit, right? If we're going to turn to the Facebook warriors, which, while that has negative connotations, Facebook warriors have solved murders in the past.
Absolutely.
They've got Netflix documentaries on their work. So I'm not going to negate the services of our Facebook warriors. And at this time, we've got a lot of conflicting information. Mm-hmm. So the story on the Jasper County woman ranges from she's the spouse of this to she was wound up in that.
Right.
The suitcase woman in Walterboro ranges from she was talking about this to she shouldn't have been over here. So yeah, there is too much uncertainty on the topic of whether or not these are connected or not.
So we don't even know the narratives of the individual cases, let alone know enough about to try and tie them together in any way, shape, or form.
At least not for my reporting purposes. Yeah. That being said, if anybody has anything that is substantial enough, I encourage them to reach out to our outlet, to reach out to support at Fitz News, or me personally, andy@fitznews.com. We'd be more than happy to explore any and every possible route and avenue, which is what we're doing now.
Yeah,
we are provided screenshots, screen caps from Facebook, and then we dive into those routes a little bit more. According to some folks, they've already identified some of these individuals. Of course, the departments have not, but that's where we are at the moment.
Well, and you mentioned earlier about the lack of proactive notification from law enforcement, the sort of preemption of these stories from some of these agencies. But the other thing that I found amazing about this story, particularly as it relates to the Jasper saga, we've got an incredible network of sources down there. We've got a network, law enforcement, prosecutorial, investigatory, judicial, you name it, court systems down there in the Lowcountry. We've got it covered, I think, better than any outlet in the state. But even our best sources are telling us we've never seen a case that's as locked down as this one. Mm-hmm. And when you hear, sources that work these cases, that are intimately familiar with these kinds of stories, when you hear them say, we've never seen secrecy like this before, I mean, antenna go up, right?
It makes you wonder. Yeah. It certainly makes you wonder. Now, if we want to give law enforcement any credit, which I think you know can be difficult for me at times, Jasper County Sheriff's Office is definitely keeping the bound woman found at the boat landing close to the chest. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have had no leaks, even from our sources, which, as you indicated, are very close, intimately familiar with the workings of law enforcement in the Lowcountry. So, yes, they are keeping this close to the chest, as are the other departments, evidently. And it does make you wonder.
Andy, just amazing work on all these stories. I know you've been keeping track of so many of these different conflicting, confusing investigations over the past week. Thank you so much for finding out the clarity you've been able to piece together. I know you're going to keep working on that with Jen Wood, with the rest of our team. But I do want to say this about these stories, and I want to make sure folks who are following this media outlet know this. We're going to continue to dig into each and every one of these stories. These folks, Andy mentioned it earlier, they wound up places where they weren't supposed to be. And we got to find out how they wound up there, exactly what led them to those unfortunate ends, and particularly in the case of the victim that we know has deceased, we got to find out exactly who is responsible for the horrific end that she met, again, in that suitcase, decomposing in that building just south of the Walterboro County Courthouse. But Andy, amazing work on these stories. Keep it tuned to Fitz News, folks, as we not only investigate these crimes, but continue to seek to fix the broken system that allows them to happen in the first place, or confuses or confounds or messes up the investigations into them after the fact. So the big joke on social media in South Carolina over the last few weeks is that the Palmetto State's politicians lost $1.8 billion, and don't know where it went, where it came from, or how to find it. So be funny, though, the joke actually happens to be true. It actually happened. This is, again, par for the course in the Palmetto State, where just last year we were talking about $3.5 billion. That was lost, an anomaly, we're told. Well, that last anomaly cost former Comptroller General Richard Ekstrom his job, and now state lawmakers are trying to fire the current treasurer, claiming he's responsible for this $1.8 billion disaster. Is that true? We're about to dig into it. But before we do, it's worth noting that this is a failure that has been many years in the making. In fact, it dates back almost to back when I was in state government working for former Governor Mark Sanford. It all started in 2007, when the state decided to switch its accounting systems. Well, several years later, as the change was implemented, a reconciliation table apparently didn't match up with the budget expenditures. And so all of a sudden, a gap began to grow, this anomaly. They called it a mapping error. I'm not sure exactly what that means. I'm not an accountant. We'll have to get Dylan Nolan in here, the guy with the business degree, to tell us exactly what that is. But the bottom line is that we ended up being $5.9 billion out of balance, out of whack. Now, I know you're probably thinking to yourself, wait a minute, that sounds like a lot of money. Yeah, it is a lot of money. But the interesting thing was that it never impacted the state's actual balances, and it never impacted the state's budget. It was literally an error on paper. So how does that work exactly? Well, in 2022, December of 2022, the former Comptroller General, the guy that lost his job, decided to put $1.8 billion into this error in an effort to make it not seem quite so bad. So in other words, instead of a $5.9 billion screw-up, we only had a $3.5 billion screw-up. Obviously, that didn't work. As I mentioned, he got fired. We exclusively reported on the $3.5 billion last February, and within 2 months, the former comptroller was out of a job. But now we got the questions about this remaining $1.8 billion, which no one knew the comptroller moved from one account to another, which apparently has been drawing interest for the last 5 years. So, question, what do we do with this money? Well, if you follow our coverage of state government, you know that this year, in the current fiscal year, Republican lawmakers are blowing about $38.1 billion. That is a new record that includes general funds, federal funds, other funds, everything that they appropriate. This coming year, it's going to be even bigger, over $40 billion. That is a ton of money, people. And it's steadily increased over the years, much faster than the growth in the state's population, and even faster than the exorbitant inflation we've been witnessing in recent years. So what do you do when you've got an extra $1.8 billion laying around? Well, when we exclusively reported on this back in February, we immediately called for these Republican lawmakers to send every penny of it back to taxpayers. And the argument was pretty simple. Number one, you've been growing government like crazy, first of all, as I just mentioned. But second of all, this has been sitting in an account for 5 years and you didn't even know it was there. So the argument that you need it desperately, not really holding much water there. Now, this situation has erupted, though, into a political spitball fight as state senators seek to pin the blame on Curtis Loftus. In fact, things got pretty hairy at a recent hearing held by those senators. Let's take a look at the exchange between the treasurer and some of his senatorial critics.
Sent us the information. Well, firstly, the auditor sent us a request. It was a paragraph. Then, so we study it and we say, hey.
The auditor drafted the finding.
Huh?
The auditor drafted the finding.
That was later on, Senator. Where was I going? He said, so he sent us a paragraph. We looked at this. We didn't understand it.
The paragraph said what?
Said the Comptroller General's office said there's a negative fund.
Okay.
Not in which balance and all that. I mean, it was very little said to it. So we set up a phone call. All they had was what they had in that letter because they didn't do the independent work. It came from the Comptroller General's office. We said, we've got to have some work. So he said, I'll get you the work papers. So you'll have them by 2 o'clock. So about 4 o'clock that afternoon, they came in. And we spent the next 24 hours trying to decipher them. We couldn't figure them out. We call the auditor's office. We don't understand this. We don't have any negative balances. We don't get it. He looks at it. He says, you mean the comptroller's office didn't talk to y'all? I said, no, they didn't talk to us. He said, it'll go away. We didn't negotiate. That was just, it's part of the same problem. We don't get communication. So the rating agencies called us. We ran all the reports that they needed to see, and they say, great, we got it. I'm being accused of breaking a law that I don't even think exists and that there's no evidence for, and there's an audit firm that you can call real fast and ask. Senator Young, could I get you to call that audit firm if I gave you the number?
So obviously, as you can see, an incredibly contentious debate at the South Carolina State House over not only what to do with this money, but who to blame. And clearly, state senators want to keep the money and blame Treasurer Loftus, although, again, I've yet to see any compelling evidence that he didn't do his job. Again, this is the guy who strokes the state's checks, who invests the state's funds. The last time I checked, the comptroller is the one who's supposed to keep an accounting of the funds. But anyway, as this debate unfolds, and in fact, as we were filming this episode, Governor Henry McMaster, another Republican who hasn't met an expenditure that he doesn't like, convened a task force whose goal ostensibly is to get to the bottom of, again, the two questions I just asked, what happened to the money and who's to blame. Now, again, is McMaster in any way better than the lawmakers when it comes to what to do with this money? We'll have to see. He has yet to comment publicly on what should be done with it. But As we continue to follow this issue, I want to make one point clear. I ran the numbers on this. If lawmakers were to give this money back, money which clearly they don't need, again, sitting in an account for 5 years, I think it's hard to argue that they desperately need that cash. But giving that money back would mean a windfall of up to $1,250 per individual taxpayer. We're talking about 1.4 million people here in South Carolina who pay taxes, who perhaps own businesses, who are employed by small businesses, who go shopping at small businesses. Money in their pockets, folks. And I'm, again, no economic development expert, but my belief is that making that investment will be far better for the state than, again, funneling this cash through the antiquated, bloated, corrupt, dysfunctional maze of government bureaucracies that for decades have continued to churn out terrible outcomes for the people of the Palmetto State. So again, while we continue to investigate this $1.8 billion anomaly, this unclaimed surplus, count on Fitz News to continue to advocate for that money going back to you, the taxpayers. After all, it's your money in the first place. All right, that's a wrap for this week's edition of Your Week in Review. Again, a huge week, obviously a ton of news, as you can tell based on all the stories we just covered. But before we go, a few items I wanted to call your attention to, stories we covered this week that we didn't have time to get into on the show. First and foremost, at the South Carolina State House, a big issue, medical marijuana. A new survey has found that 83% of South Carolinians support medical marijuana, doctor-prescribed medical marijuana. That is a huge number, one that's bound to impact this debate moving forward as it moves onto the campaign trail with upcoming elections. Also this week, our Dylan Nolan did a big story on the ongoing debate over your liberty, specifically politicians authorizing the ongoing warrantless spying of your communications. That's right, domestic warrantless spying, total violation of the Fourth Amendment. Dylan Nolan has a big story up on the site this week about how that issue progressed in our nation's capital. And last but not least, Cheer Incorporated. If you follow this media outlet, you know we've covered this story from the very beginning. In fact, we drove this story from the very beginning. Two big settlements in that case this week. We've got all the latest details on those on FitzNews.com. Thanks again for joining us. If you like our coverage, please like us, subscribe to us. Helps empower everything we do here at FitzNews.